This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. Now, if you're over the age of 60 or if you're a caregiver, if you're taking care of a family member who is considered within the age group of a senior citizen or an older adult, you would be no stranger to discussing or being familiar with health issues like diabetes or heart disease. But when it comes to mental health, the mental health state, mental health issues or problems of our senior citizens. Now, that's something that we may not be paying enough attention to. So what we want to find out in our segment today is what are the mental health issues that are prevalent among our older adults, and what do we need to do to recognize it? How can we help our elderly family members to manage these issues as well? And my guest today is Dr. Wan Izwin Wan Hassan, consultant psychiatrist specializing in geriatric psychiatry from Subang Jaya Medical Center. How are you today, Dr. Izwin?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you very much. And thank you for inviting me again to BFM. It's lovely talking today.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for your time. And I remember the last time you were on, it was a really, really, enlightening conversation as well. So I hope that we will be able to find out more about the issues that we want to discuss today. Now, this is the time to get your questions over to Dr. Izwin. If you have anything you'd like to find out about mental health issues regarding senior citizens, whether it's for yourself or for a loved one, you can call our phone lines 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, Dr. Izwin, we're starting this show based on the premise that the elderly population is prone to mental health issues. Why is this so? What would be some factors in an elderly person's life or within that age group that makes them prone to mental health issues?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the question. So I wouldn't necessarily say that the elderly would be prone to mental health issues, but they can develop certain mental health issues that perhaps are not necessarily common or present in the younger people, for example. So for example, things like cognitive disorders, that's more prevalent in the elderly compared to the younger people. In fact, actually being older may actually be protective against certain mental disorders, for example, depression, because older generations may be able to have skills that they have learned all their life, have maturity, things that are quite protective against certain mental health conditions like depression or anxiety. However, they also have factors in their life that also makes it more likely for them to develop certain mental disorders, especially depression and anxiety. So things like being lonely, social isolation, having financial issues, lots of worries about their children, not having much to do, a loss of a role, bereavement. So those kind of things can predispose to developing mental health disorders. More commonly, what we see, especially within my specialty of geriatric psychiatry, is anxiety and depression.
All right. So that seems to be a bit of a paradox. On the one hand, you say that being at a certain age confers you protective factors against depression, but there are other social factors that lead that increase that risk. So then are we back to square one then, recognizing that, regardless of your age, depression could be a risk?
Yes. That's what I'm trying to say. Regardless of your age, depression can be a risk. It can occur at any time along the length of your life period. So rather than people kind of say, well, I've turned over 60, so I've lived my life, I'm not going to get depression, it's actually quite surprising how people can present with mental illness quite later in their life because of the change in the circumstances and because of certain life events that may not necessarily be present when they are younger, actually. So, so there is a little bit of a paradox there that you've learned all this sort of maturity, you've learned how to cope with stress and anxiety all your life, but then towards the end, towards the later part of your life, you're suddenly faced with all sorts of new things, new events, new stresses that you didn't have when you were younger, that's now predisposing you to developing mental health disorders. And most prevalently, we see physical health problems, which we all know is more common mm-hmm. in the elderly. So things like pain, that's quite a huge predisposing factor to developing things like anxiety, depression, sleep problems. They can also develop things like strokes, which may lead them to develop psychotic disorders, delusional ideas. And sometimes what I also see is that when people are socially isolated and they don't see people very much and they don't keep their mind occupied, they may become depressed, and this may be accompanied with psychosis. So they may actually develop paranoia. So you sometimes hear about sort of, you know, older women living alone, you know, suspicious about the neighbors, thinking people are coming in to steal their things. And some of these factors may predispose them to develop certain mental health conditions.
So it must be challenging, though, and I think especially in our society where the recognition and understanding of mental health issues or these behavioral changes as a mental health condition, I think we're still a long way from fully acknowledging that this is not just somebody who's acting like that because of age, who's entering a, I think, you know, sometimes we throw around the phrase second childhood.
Yeah,
that must be a huge challenge for somebody in your specialty.
Yes, and I think it's a huge challenge as well, I think, for the caregivers and for the people out there in the community, because a lot of the time, some of these behavioural changes are being dismissed as just, you know, they're just being old, they're just being awkward, they're just being difficult, when actually, you know, it's actually masking a real underlying mental health diagnosis. So, for example, you know, dementia, which is a mental condition in itself, people would always dismiss it as just being forgetful. Well, she's 89, of course she'll forget things. But actually, just because you're older doesn't necessarily mean you'll forget quite major things. So dementia, you know, it might be that this person is actually developing dementia. It's the same that we see with depression. Again, that can be very poorly recognised. So older people who's kind of more withdrawn, more irritable, that's the main thing that we often see. For the elderly as a feature or a presentation of depression. You know, it's easily dismissed as, well, they're just being grumpy, they're just being awkward, you know, they don't like everything that you serve them, they're always throwing things around. So people can dismiss this as just, you know, older person just misbehaving, when actually there's an underlying condition, underlying treatable mental health condition that's being overlooked.
So being withdrawn, being irritable, those are the two, I suppose, maybe mood-related changes you've described linked to depression. What about changes to their behaviours and daily routines? Can we spot depression through any of those changes?
Yes, yes. So you can spot depression from a change in behaviour. So, for example, depression can actually present itself with cognitive difficulties. So one of the things that people often notice is that a person who's actually depressed may develop features that we call pseudo-dementia, so as if they've developed dementia. So, for example, they may forget to turn the lights off or cook something and it gets burned. And the person might say, well, they're just being forgetful, they probably have dementia, when actually this person may be feeling so depressed that they forget how to do their normal activities of daily living. And other behavioural changes may be that, you know, they're not dressing themselves properly, they're not going out, so they may be somebody who used to enjoy going out chatting or calling their friends or calling their children and grandchildren, and all of a sudden they're just, you know, they just stop doing things that they used to enjoy. Or they used to enjoy gardening and they stop doing it. And that can be a feature of depression, where you have anhedonia, where you lack enjoyment from things that you like. And another key feature that often we dismiss is also lack of appetite. Hmm. So the person may start refusing food. And again, we can easily dismiss this as, well, you know, they're just being awkward, they don't like my cooking, you know, especially when you live with family members, extended family, you know, they're just being awkward, you know, they're refusing food, why is she losing weight? And this can actually be a feature of depression, that they're actually low and they're lacking appetite. And another change in behaviour is poor sleep. Mm. So they're not sleeping at night, so they're getting up super early at 3 in the morning and, you know, moving the things around the house, and this can disrupt the whole house and wake everyone up. Or they don't sleep till late into the morning, and they're going around walking. And those kind of things can actually be a feature of an underlying mental health issue or even a cognitive issue, you know, early signs that they may have dementia. So these are sort of the early signs, I think, as caregivers, as people who live with the elderly or partners, maybe to look out for. I mean, they may not necessarily be representative or maybe a feature of a mental health condition. However, if you spot these things, it might be easier for you to do something about it, or to at least present to the GP or to the health practitioner to say, is there something wrong with them, or, you know, is this just my imagination? Because the most important thing is if you recognize that these things are abnormal and get them seen and treated early, we're more likely to be able to help you and support you in terms of treatment.
So what are you seeing? Are you seeing more awareness of families who are bringing in their elderly relatives because they recognize that these changes should not be brushed off? Or, you know, where are we right now?
There's a variety. I think there's quite a mix of awareness that I'm seeing right now. So where I used to practice, which was UK, I've spent 20 years there, there is a bit more awareness in terms of mental health conditions. So families, even the patients themselves, are quite aware that there is a mental disorder, there is a mental health condition. Here in Malaysia, it's still very mixed. So you have families who are, you know, especially the younger generation, who read a lot about this, would bring their grandparents, you know, for example, and say, yeah, I have noticed that this isn't quite right. And I do read up on the internet about things like dementia, and I've read out about depression and anxiety, and I think something's wrong with grandma. And as opposed to sort of the middle-aged generation, who might kind of still have the sort of old feel, you know, that this is nothing, you know, this is quite normal. This is just sort of, you know, behavior. They're trying to be awkward. So at the moment, what I am seeing is kind of a mixed bag of people who are being very aware and people who are not. I guess the worry is that a lot of the older generations are still not very aware at all in terms of mental disorder. It's still very hard for the family members to bring them in to see a psychiatrist or to see a doctor to start with, you know, because there's always that kind of notion, there's nothing wrong with me, just leave me alone. And you know, it's a huge challenge because, you know, the education isn't there, and people are still dismissive about mental health conditions and mental health treatment. Especially.
Yeah. And where do you think that's coming from, that resistance of, you know, when a family member wants to try to get them help, but it becomes such a battle almost, right? And you don't want to be forcing an older person to be seeing a doctor or a mental health provider against their will.
I agree. It's really, really hard. And it takes a lot of skill as well to persuade someone to see, you know, even a doctor or a psychiatrist. You know, it's where do you start? I agree. You know, where do you persuade them? Because a lot of the time, the older people may not necessarily think there is anything wrong with them. And I think this is the difficulty with mental health conditions. You can't see it. So if you've got a broken leg, you can see your broken leg is hanging off, so you know you need to go see a doctor. But when you've got a mental health condition, you can't really see depression. And a lot of people with mental health conditions lack something called insight. So that's the ability to recognize there is something the matter or something wrong with them. Even when they are severely anxious or severely psychotic or severely depressed, they still fail to recognize it. So as a family member, I guess, you know, trying to do the gentle persuasion is the first step. I always find that trying to, you know, take them to a trusted family doctor to start with, it's always a good, gentle introduction. So sometimes with the older generation, they may develop trust with certain family doctors that will say, well, I think there is something wrong. I'm going to refer you to somebody, as opposed to going straight to see a psychiatrist or see a mental health practitioner, for example. And I guess it's sort of trying to be quite, you know, subtle. You know, so I've got someone who had difficulty bringing their parent to come over to see me. So she rung me beforehand and asked me what's the best way that I can get my mother, you know, just kind of seeking advice you know, what's the best way that I can bring my mother? You know, she's going to freak out mm-hmm. as soon as she sees the word psychiatrist on your front door. So there's things I can do. I can remove the plate that says psychiatrist when I know that they're coming. You know, I've gone out of my way. Sometimes I meet them in the foyer, you know, in the reception area and say, oh, hello, hi. You know, just introduce them, gently introduce them. Come to my office. You know, let's talk a bit more about your worries. So there's ways that you can go about it. In the UK, it's a bit easier because you can go to their house. Mm. So I just turned up and announced and said, hello, I'm the doctor. you know, will you let me in? And most people will let a doctor in. I can be a burglar and they still let me in.
Oh, no.
I've got the tag that says I'm a doctor.
No, but that's...
It is hard to engage.
Yeah, and that's where perhaps what we need to build up in Malaysia is more community-level approaches.
Yes, I think so, yes. Engaging them in the community. And I think one of the things, you know, that would be useful is kind of giving, you know, mental health talks to the aged community. So places that they gather, you know, obviously with COVID, they stopped gathering. Mm-hmm. But, you know, places like churches, mosques, places of worship, places that they meet, community centres, just to kind of, I think what I find with my patients especially telling me that when they talk about it and realise that actually my friends have mental health disorders, you know, that so-and-so, Mr. So-and-so who looks so calm, actually has anxiety, that actually breaks down the stigma so much better than me going in and giving a talk. Mm. You know, I'm surprised at how many of my patients say how relaxed they feel about seeing a mental health or seeing a psychiatrist when they realize that their friends, you know, or their colleagues or people they know also see us, because I think that destigmatizes us as someone who sees crazy people.
Yeah, it's, you know, definitely
that we do see unwell people.
It's definitely the influence of the peers, even over and above their own family members and children.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So I'm speaking to Dr. Wan Izwin Wan Hassan, consultant psychiatrist specializing in geriatric psychiatry from Subang Jaya Medical Center. We're discussing, you know, what kinds of mental health issues are prevalent among our senior citizens and how we can spot them, especially if we are their caregivers and their family members. If you have questions for Dr. Izwin, now's the time to send them in. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or call 03-7733-2900 or even tweet us at BFM Radio. When we come back, we'll go a little bit more into what can we do to help older adults who do have depression. And Dr. Izwin has also mentioned issues related to stroke. So I want to find out a bit more about that as well. So stay tuned right here to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. My guest today is Dr. Wan Izwin Wan Hassan, consultant psychiatrist specializing in geriatric psychiatry. She's from Subang Jaya Medical Center, and we're discussing how to spot mental health issues among our senior citizens. Our lines are open if you have questions or any experiences perhaps that you'd like to share. 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, Dr. Izwin, before the break, you spoke quite at length, I think, about knowing how to recognize signs of depression among our senior citizens, you know, changes in mood and behavior that could be a person being withdrawn, irritable, having forgetfulness, or trouble doing daily living activities that used to not be a problem, you know, getting dressed and things like that. Losing enjoyment in daily activities as well, lack of appetite, poor sleep and restlessness. So, you know, assuming that we recognize these signs and we are able to get our elderly loved one to seek help and support or treatment, what does treatment look like for a senior citizen with depression?
So treatment varies between, you know, for a senior citizen. I always like to look at a holistic treatment, you know, not just kind of focusing on one area of treatment. So one of the things, if they've got quite mild depression, I look at sort of the activities, what they can do at home in order to help with their mood. So we call it sort of like a behavioural activation, things that they can do to help themselves. So, for example, giving them tasks around the house, keeping them busy, going to social community centres, the things that really can help with their mood, lift their mood, cheer them up a little bit. For sort of people who I think have got further issues as to why they've become depressed, you know, the psychological therapy. So there are great psychologists out there who can work with a person, older person. I think there's always a lot of, you know, there's always a lot of opinion that if you, you know, just because you're older, you wouldn't be able to engage in psychological therapy. That's actually not true. That the older people actually want to talk to someone. I've got many people in my clinic who loves talking, and they actually, you know, they actually find it really pleasurable to be able to express themselves, to be able to talk to someone, offload all their emotions, you know, figure out how, you know, why they feel the way that they feel. And just having someone validate their feelings and acknowledge that what they're feeling, you know, is part of, you know, is part of their current condition. And I guess for the people who are more severe, for the people who really, I feel, are at risk to themselves or other people who are not eating, who are severely anxious or depressed, then we would consider medication as treatment. You know, so those are kind of things like antidepressants, anti-anxiety medication, anything that really could help to alleviate their symptoms. Another thing that I forgot to mention in terms of a symptom of depression that I see quite commonly in the elders often miss is that they also present with physical health problems. So repeated hospital visits, can't swallow, chest pains that are unexplained. You know, the older people sometimes can't say to you they're depressed, but they display what we call somatic symptoms. So they repeatedly seek physical health input, and all the tests have come back to normal. And if you've got a very good physician, they'll refer to a psychiatrist. But sometimes, you know, these people can actually go through multiple investigations and nothing can be found, when actually this is related to anxiety or depression. So very important to spot in the elderly.
And again, that is another challenge, because they'll probably be told it's all in your head. You're imagining it, right? Especially when, you know, you look at the results and those quantifiable results don't show you anything.
Yeah. It is very difficult, I think. And these people go through a lot of tests and investigations, sometimes, you know, without finding anything discernible at the end of the test. But I guess if, you know, someone skilled could probably say, you know, gently persuade them, then, you know, it is a treatable condition. And it's just, I think the difficulty is getting over that first step of saying, I think this is mental health. And you need to see the psychiatrist across the hall, please.
It's such a difficult...
It is.
It's such a difficult journey,
Yes.
So we do have Tay asking on WhatsApp. You know, Tay wants to know what is the age range that we're talking about here? If we're talking about mental health issues for senior citizens, is there a particular age range we're talking about?
At the moment, yes, the age range we're talking about is, I would consider, the retirement age, so 60 and above. That's when you have the life changes associated with the older adults' mental health conditions. So we're talking about 60 and above, but, you know, people who are over 50 can also have similar problems. But I wouldn't, you know, I think there'd be a lot of angry 50-year-olds if I say they're old people.
But I think what you pointed out, it is linked to the life changes.
Life changes, yes. The life events, the life changes, retirement, bereavement, financial worries. So those are kind of the things that's, you know, that kind of creeps up at that certain age, physical health problems. So that's why we sort of categorise geriatric psychiatry as 60 years old.
Now, is it safe for an elderly person to be on, say, anti-anxiety or antidepressant medications if they're also on multiple other medications for their physical conditions?
Research suggests yes. There's no major adverse events associated. However, it depends on what other medications that they're on, and it also depends on the dosage of the medication and the type of medication that you're prescribing. So, for example, SSRIs, the most commonly prescribed antidepressant group, tends to be quite safe in the elderly. However, it's about making sure that they are on the lowest dose as possible, started at a low dose, titrated to an appropriate dose, not too high, but not too low either. And also watch out for things like comorbidities, like kidney problems, So we've got to make sure that we don't give too high of a dose or the kidney can't clear it. So it does require a bit of a special skill, which is one of the reasons why my specialty existed, was because we both have to be almost medical and psychiatric at the same time because of the multiple comorbidities and drug interaction, you know, presenting in the older people. But they are generally safe, tolerable, and can be prescribed in the long term.
All right. Now, you mentioned psychosis linked to, or symptoms of psychosis linked to stroke. Could you explain a little bit more about that now? Because stroke is very common among our older population.
Yes. So in a research done in the, published in the British Medical Journal, they found that about 17 to 20% of people that suffer from stroke can develop psychotic disorders or psychosis. The kind of things that they may, you know, people can have kind of the strokes where you can see them, you know, display physical stroke symptoms, but people can also have strokes where it's a silent stroke. So you can't see anything physical, but they may suddenly develop a sudden onset psychosis. So the most commonly we see are things we call delusional disorder, where they have delusional beliefs. For example, people are stealing from them, or their partner is, their partner is unfaithful. So we do, you know, it's not super common, but yes, we do see them. And I've had a few present to my clinic as well, who presented with sudden onset psychosis, no reason, no stresses, you know, MRI of the brain. And then you can see, you know, several areas where they've suffered a stroke. Generally quite treatable as well. It's just about spotting it early and getting the right treatment.
So these are signs that a stroke could have occurred, where there are no physical signs of a stroke, like your one side paralysis and weakness and all that, right? But can psychosis symptoms develop as an effect of stroke because of damage to the brain?
Yes, it can. So, it can be related to the damage on the brain, especially if it affects a certain part of the brain, so the frontal part, the side part. So certain strokes, certain areas of the brain can produce what we call psychotic symptoms as a result of the stroke. And sometimes large enough strokes can also cause psychosis, you know, as part of a picture where the brain just becomes fried, I guess, if you think about it. You know, it's just been affected, it's become damaged, and you can develop stroke-related psychosis, as it's called. But more commonly, I think that we need to watch out for is depression. It's also extremely common in stroke patients. Again, can occur, you know, upwards of 20 to 40% of stroke survivors where they survive the stroke, but I guess the impairment has left them with significant depression. And that can lead to psychosis as well, where they start having delusional beliefs that they can't swallow or that their family hates them. And that needs to be looked at as well.
How would you manage those kinds of symptoms?
In terms of, I guess it's very difficult for stroke. It depends on the level of cognitive abilities. So psychological therapy would always be the best sort of, you know, advice to try. But however, this has to be carefully balanced with how much you can, they can retain and process information. In most cases, usually medication. Simply because a lot of the stroke-related mental health conditions can be related to brain chemical imbalance. So some of the medication can help to regulate these brain chemical imbalances. And things like psychoeducation, things like therapy, making sure the person engages in stroke rehabilitation therapy, positive thinking from the family, encouragement, you know, just having your family around, your caregivers support you. Those are the important factors in predicting a good outcome for people who have stroke-related mental disorders.
All right. I'm speaking to Dr. Wan Izwin Wan Hassan, consultant psychiatrist specializing in geriatric psychiatry from Subang Jaya Medical Center. We're discussing mental health issues among the elderly. And we're talking generally within the age range of above 60 years old. That's when retirement happens and lots of life changes take place as well, which then puts a person at higher risk of experiencing things like depression, dementia, a lot of the physical health conditions like pain are also related to mental health issues. Mm-hmm. So we're discussing these, and when we come back, I want to just talk a little bit more about, I guess, very much a lot of it comes back to the role of caregivers, family members, adult children, and even grandchildren, what we can do to support our senior citizens, and a little bit about the effects of the pandemic as well. It's just been difficult for everyone, but most especially, I think, for the older adults. So if you have questions or thoughts you'd like to share with us, you can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back after the market update, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. My guest today, Dr. Wan Iswin Wan Hassan, on Zoom with me. She's a consultant psychiatrist specializing in geriatric psychiatry from Subang Jaya Medical Center. And we're discussing how to spot mental health issues among senior citizens. And what we just covered after we talked about depression was related to stroke and how symptoms of psychosis, like having delusions, typically, delusions, I think, will be the main one. They can present as symptoms of a stroke, especially, and something to look out for if these behaviors come on suddenly without other signs of a stroke that you typically look out for. Best to get, a doctor's advice to see if it could be a stroke that has taken place in the brain. Now, these can be very frightening for caregivers and presumably not for the person themselves. They're not aware of it. But for their children, for people living with them or taking care of them, what should be the first action to take when these happen?
So the first action to take is, I guess, you need to speak to the person and find out what the delusions are. Some things that might be useful as well, I guess, for me as a health practitioner when I need an assessment is if they could record an event. You know, nowadays we've got phones, we've got videos. So that's quite useful for me as a health practitioner, because sometimes necessarily when the family brings the person that suffers from a mental disorder, they might not necessarily know what's going on. And I think taking them to see a health practitioner, see a doctor, is very important because the psychosis or the change could be related to an infection. So urine infection, chest infection, commonly wound infection, those things can cause what we call delirium, which is another form of mental disorder where people get very acutely confused and they can present with psychiatric conditions like delusions and hallucinations. So sometimes a simple treatment with antibiotics, a simple blood test, a simple urine test can actually eliminate those symptoms quite quickly. Mm. However, if they still persist and all the tests have come back negative, then the first step would be to see, you know, an appropriate specialist to diagnose and treat the condition. And this can range from seeing a neurologist, a brain doctor, so that they can arrange for the scan and look at the cause, you know, rule out treatable things like encephalitis, which is inflammation of the brain, infections. And if they can't find anything, you know, or stroke, of course, and if they can't find anything or they can't treat it, they may refer the person to see a psychiatrist where we can start treatment, which can be antipsychotic treatment. And that can actually rapidly improve the symptoms as well. And I think for the caregiver, that's always the big relief, because I living with someone who is delusional and mostly agitated, I think is the worst thing. I think if it's just kind of, you know, just simple delusions where they accuse the maid of stealing and they're generally quite, you know, all right with it, that's not too bad. But, you know, I've had patients who try to leave the house, climb over gates, sit in the middle of the road. So those are not very pleasant things to experience, and they can be very distressing and very scary for the caregiver.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of that is related to sort of preventing the older person from harming themselves, right? Putting themselves in dangerous situations. Mm. But when it comes to self-harm in itself, and even perhaps suicide, is that a concern, a big concern among our elderly? And is it necessarily always linked to a mental health disorder?
Yes, because suicide, being older, especially older male, is associated with a higher risk of suicide. So in a study done in the US, for example, they found that 18% of suicide is actually completed by the older male population. But also, I think being older also puts them at high risk in the sense that they don't necessarily do the cry for help. They don't tell you they want to kill themselves. They're usually quite quiet about it. It's always planned. So they'll make all the plans. They do the wills. It's very high sometimes. And they do. They take steps to make sure it's not discovered. And they don't take half measures. So this is why, you know, the older population can be a higher risk of a completed suicide, as we call it, compared to the younger population. Mm-hmm. And they may not necessarily present with depressive features. Again, I've mentioned earlier, it's very difficult to spot. And I think one of the major worries as well is some of the suicides are also linked to homicides where, you know, the stress of caregiving, for example, can lead to, and we've had a few cases, where people, the stress of caregiving someone who's disabled or ill, bedbound with a stroke or dementia, has caused the person caring, feeling very depressed to a point that they, you know, they killed the person that they're looking after and then they killed themselves, you know, because support and help out there is so little. So yes, it is a higher risk. And I think this is why it's so important to get the right treatment. And I guess as caregivers, family members, to always check on your elder relatives, you know, ask if they're okay. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, sometimes it might be a simple question as, are you okay? Do you need more help? Mm-hmm. You know, those are the kind of things that may just be enough to open up that bit of conversation. I think older people don't tend to be open about their troubles. They don't want to trouble, as they call it, their loved ones. So they tend to keep financial worries, a lot of worries to themselves. But sometimes as children or, you know, family members, we do need to have that conversation and we do need to check on them more regularly.
I was just thinking about what you said earlier, that you have encountered many older adults who are actually quite open to psychotherapy because they have an outlet. People to talk to. And I guess that points to the fact that they are probably quite isolated when they're in their family lives.
Yes, they are. My clinics are filled with lonely people. Mm. it is quite sad. Yes, they do come and, you know, they wanted to talk about a lot of things in their life. It gets quite lonely, I think. And they feel like they can't burden their children with the problem. It's always the common theme, I find. And they needed that outlet to talk to someone about it. And it's about kind of, you know, pointing them to the right direction, pointing them to the place that, you know, people that they can talk to, whether it's a psychotherapist, a psychiatrist, a counsellor. But those are the things that actually helps, you know, knowing that they have a person that they can talk to. Because I think what we sometimes forget is that, you know, we lead such busy lives nowadays as working people, you know, the younger generation. You know, lots of people have to work long hours. Sometimes it's quite hard to spend that extra bit of time to sit down and listen to, you know, your parents' day, for example, because it feels so mundane as opposed to your busy, hectic life. But sometimes that's all they want, is that just 10 minutes a day of them just telling them mundane stuff, because that's actually their release. Mm. And I think as people, younger people working, you know, it can be quite difficult for us, but, you know, we need to also look after our parents. And part of looking after our parents is, you know, looking after their mental health.
Absolutely. Now, this pandemic, of course, you know, many older people can't even meet up with their friends, perhaps. They would usually have their social interactions. They're worried about the impact of the disease on their health. Family members are, like you said, we're juggling, 10,000 balls in the air at the same time. I don't think I need to get you to talk very much about the impact of the pandemic on the elderly, but maybe a little bit more about what could we be missing? Again, it's because we're just stressing over so many things that we're not taking the time to just stop, right, and ask.
Yeah. I think what we can be missing, so for example, with restrictions against crossing borders, you know, things like that, we might be missing sort of more subtle, more sort of physical things that, for example, you know, we could probably be ringing our parents to check on how they are, but it's not the same as physically visiting them and making sure, have they got food in the house? Are they dressing themselves? Have they had a shower today? So I think those are the kind of things that we're missing from the pandemic, you know, the subtle, the physical signs. And it's very difficult to help our elderly, you know, with alleviating their loneliness in terms of telephone calls and not suffice. You know, it might be things like setting them up with regular calls with their friends, you know, liaising with their friend's child, for example. You're trying to set up something that they might struggle to do themselves, might be helpful for them just because they can't see their neighbours and talk to Mr. So-and-so anymore in a community setting. I think as children, we may have to step in and do the technology stuff for them as a way of helping them.
All right. You know, what you pointed out about just are they dressing? You know, have they showered today? And, those are the kinds of very subtle changes that would point to the issues that you highlighted earlier. But at the same time, I can't imagine being able to pick up the phone and, you know, whether your elderly parent would be amenable to having a question, have you showered today? What, you think I can't take care of myself?
Yeah, you're right. They usually will be very defensive. And this is the thing that we are missing because of the pandemic, this face-to-face, you know, and just sort of, you know, part of what I do, I remember when I used to do home visits, picking up clues around the house. Have they paid the bills? Are there red notices everywhere? So we are missing things that our parents are struggling because we're not physically there. And I think, you know, that's what the pandemic is causing, which is quite worrying.
Okay. We have somebody who WhatsApped in. So I'm just going to very quickly get you to perhaps try and address her issues here. She says she's 53, has been on medication for depression, she's still experiencing a lot of anxiety. I think the gist of what she wants to ask is, you know, are these medications that she'll have to take, you know, for the rest of her life?
It depends. I think what I always say to my patients is that if you equip yourself with psychotherapy, you learn psychological ways of managing your mood and your anxiety, you can come off antidepressants in the long term. However, if you just choose to take medication without doing anything active to try and address the source of your anxiety and depression, then you may have to take antidepressants for the rest of your life. However, if you still have symptoms despite taking medication, I would suggest seeking appropriate specialist support to see whether the medication is optimized and whether there's any changes needed to get to the right treatment.
All right. Now, just very quickly, a last message, Dr. Izwin. Is COVID-19 vaccination, I'm only bringing this up because we're in this phase where the elderly should be prioritized for their vaccination right now. And there are some concerns, you know, if a person has dementia, is a stroke patient, or any of the issues that we've discussed today related to mental health conditions, is COVID-19 vaccination safe for them?
So far, from what we've observed and so far from what the research is suggesting, there's no clear association between sort of having the COVID vaccine with any worsening of mental health conditions or COVID vaccine being unsafe for people with mental health conditions. I think what we just need to observe is that they may have multiple medication and multiple comorbidities. So that needs addressing with their primary care physician or their specialist. And they would probably be the one best judged to assess the fitness or the safety of receiving the vaccine. All right. But I think a lot of people, the number one question I usually get asked is anxiety around the vaccine. So a lot of older people do ring me and say, you know, they're very anxious about the vaccine. And I'm usually quite happy to help talk over to them that, you know, you've got to have this. This is perfectly safe for you. But a lot of them usually feel more of the anxiety symptoms, you know, pre-vaccine and post-vaccine.
All right. Just a final message then about what we've discussed today, Dr. Izwin.
I guess my final message is if you are a caregiver or if you are an older person yourself listening to this, please don't dismiss sort of the subtle changes that you see, you know, the mental health symptoms that you're displaying as something, you know, that you just need to just sweep under the carpet and ignore. Please seek the appropriate help. Please seek the appropriate treatment. Because I think, you know, what people forget is that mental health conditions are so treatable. And it's just about finding the right support and the right treatment. And I don't think anybody wants to suffer a second longer with mental health conditions. So please seek the right support.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Dr. Wan Izwin Wan Hassan, consultant psychiatrist specializing in geriatric psychiatry. And she's from Subang Jaya Medical Center. We've been discussing how to spot mental health issues among senior citizens and most importantly, what to do, especially if you're a caregiver. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.